We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com and on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Today's show powered, as always, by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You got the socials. Look for at The Racing Biz, free mobile app. You can use that for your Apple and Android devices. We also have this program every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on Baltimore Positive, WNST AM 1570. Also have a sister show that airs 10 a.m. Saturdays as well on ESPN Richmond, Richmond, Virginia. So a lot of ways to keep up with racing and breeding news from the Mid-Atlantic and everywhere with The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Got a lot to do today. Got a lot on the show today. You know, you get to the end of the Preakness and you sort of hope, well, maybe we get a little break or something, but No such luck. We got a lot to do. So what's coming up later? Author Jack Gilden going to join us a little bit later on. He's going to be sort of late in the show. He's going to be here to talk about his book, The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid and the Undoing of a Sure Thing. You know, we're heading towards the Belmont Stakes. The Kentucky Derby's in the rear view. The Preakness is in the rear view. The Belmont's coming up, and Jack's book is about Spectacular Bid. And whatever you think you know about the bid, whatever you think you know about Ronnie Franklin, whatever you think you know about what happened in the Belmont Stakes when Spectacular Bid was upset in the Belmont, Jack Gilden's going to ask you to take a second look and maybe reconsider it. It's a good conversation. Looking forward to that. We're also a little bit later going to visit with Chris Sobosinski. Chris is the Racing Information Coordinator at Delaware Park. Delaware Park kicked off its 2023 meet on Wednesday, May 24th. Chris is going to share some of the new things you may notice at Del Park this year. Things are a little bit different there. I mean, let's not get crazy here. It is their 86th year of live racing at Delaware, so some things are certainly the same and still going to be probably the nicest paddock in the country for racing, but some things a little bit different look here and there. So Chris going to fill us in on what's going on with our friends at Delaware Park. Also going to have a visit from Liza Hendricks. She's the CEO of Wanamakers, wanamakers.com, telling us about a couple things going on with them. And speaking of which, a shout out and thanks to the supporters of Off to the Races Radio. Those include the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers, True Valor, the new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. But before we get to all that, let's take a look back at the week that was. And of course, the number one thing that we want to talk about here is last week's 148th running of the Grade One $1.5 million Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Racecourse. And you know, last week, it was a strange Preakness. I got to be honest, it was a strange Preakness. There was just a lot of talk about a lot of things around racing. You know, there was Bob Baffert and should he be allowed to race when he wasn't allowed to race at Churchill Downs? Should he be allowed to run in the Preakness with National Treasure? There was a number of equine fatalities that took place at Churchill leading up to the Kentucky Derby, and what does that mean? What is the future in Maryland? I mean, what's going to happen with Pimlico Racecourse, which is, well, let's say it's seen better days, and really something's going to have to happen sooner than later with the facilities in Maryland, and the horsemen and the racetrack are negotiating a new deal. What's going to happen in the future in Maryland? So there was a lot of just sort of stuff in the air, a lot of stuff around the races that, you know, and look, if you go to the races, if you're a racing person, you know that sometimes what the humans are doing, sometimes it makes you want to tear your hair out a little bit, you know, whether it's the betting product or takeout is too high, or as I mentioned, the state of the facilities. But you know what? It's amazing how often when we are all sort of down on each other as humans, it's the horses that redeem it. And Saturday really was no different. I want to start here. Let's play a clip from the Preakness Stakes. National Treasure going to defeat Blazing Sevens in an absolute thriller here in the 148th Preakness.
They are in the gate. And they're off in the 148th running of the Preakness Stakes. National Treasure with a quarter to go at Pimlico has a neck in front from Blazing Sevens. Mage is called on to run, and Red Route 1 down to the inside. National Treasure, Blazing Sevens trying to get by. They're on even terms, and head-to-head with a furlong left to go. Mage has to quicken up from third. Blazing Sevens, National Treasure fighting back on the inside. Blazing Sevens on the outside. Blazing Sevens, National Treasure. Oh, what a Preakness! It's National Treasure who gets the lead late. Fights Blazing Sevens all the way down the stretch. Mage was third. Red Rod won.
Dave Rodman on the call. The great Dave Rodman. Nobody's better than the Rod Dog in the race calling business. Another terrific call in the Preakness Stakes as National Treasure edges Blazing Sevens in a fight to the wire. Mage, the Kentucky Derby winner, finishing third. Bob Baffert, the trainer of National Treasure, gets his record-setting eighth Preakness victory. And rider Johnny Velasquez, Hall of Famer. He's been a Hall of Famer for like a decade. He's won every race that matters, almost all of them multiple times, except the Preakness. Gets his first Preakness there. So Johnny V gets the Preakness, his first Preakness triumph. Now, I mentioned a minute ago, you know, horses redeeming the humans in this. And really, it was true. And it wasn't just this great Preakness fight. You also had record-setting performances from Nagarok, who set a record for 1 mile on the turf at Pimlico, 133.11 in winning the James Murphy Stakes. Also, Never Explain, a course record, winning the Grade 3 Dinner Party Stakes. Gets a mile and an eighth on the turf in 146.14 to win the Dinner Party by a half length over Hurricane Dream. That gave Shug McGahey, the trainer, his fifth win in the Dinner Party, formerly known as the Dixie. So he's kind of made that race a little bit his property over the years. And I also want to note, Straight No Chaser won the Maryland Sprint Stakes, another Grade 3 event. And I'll tell you what, he won this in a way that suggests he might be just about as good as any sprinter out there in the country right now. Wins off by 7.5 lengths, going 108.27. And 108.27 is moving out at Pimlico. The course record is 107.70. That was Covfefe back in 2019 in a season that she went on to be the Philly Sprint champion. But before that, the course record was 109 flat. So this is one of the very small handful of fastest races ever run going six furlongs at Pimlico. 108.27 is absolutely just scorchingly fast. So very impressive win. Johnny V was also on Straight No Chaser, that one trained by Dan Blacker. Now, want to also turn our attention, we had a sale this past week, the Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-year-olds in training sale. This takes place right after the Preakness every year, and last year they set a record. This year they didn't quite set a record, but they sold nearly $35 million worth of horses. That was topped by an Arrogate filly. She was the sale topper, bringing a cool $1 million. I thought it might be kind of fun just to play a highlight of her being sold for $1 million. If you've never been to the sale, it's quite an experience, quite a little chunk, a little piece of the thoroughbred industry maybe you don't get to see very often. But here's what it sounds like when a filly goes for $1 million.
Hip 552 now, consigned by Hartley Dorenzo, Thoroughbred's agent. Chestnut filly by Arrogate out of Twixie by Mutak Dim. Filly here by Arrogate, the late great champion racehorse, earned over $17 million during his career. Sire of Grade 1 winners such as Secret Oath, Cave Rock, and Fun to Dream. And this a half-sister to four winners, including the stakes-winning Twixie Roll. Increased earnings for American Outlaw under that first name. Also the family of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winning Caleb's Posse. And this very impressive filly by Arrogate worked in 10 flat.
I'd had to get down 50 and 100. I'd had to get down 100 and 100. $1 million over here with Tice. Thank you.
That's what it sounds like when a horse goes for $1 million. I cut out about 2.5-3 minutes worth of bidding that got them to the $1 million mark for that Arrogate filly. But just to give you a sense of what it sounds like at the sale when a horse going for $1 million. So she is the sale topper, just about $35 million, little shy of $35 million worth of horses sold at Facing Tipton Mid-Atlantic, 2-year-old in training sale that took place at Timonium this past Monday and Tuesday. All right, as I said, we've got a bunch of guests on tap. We've got Jack Gildon to talk about his book, The Fast Ride, about the defeat of Spectacular Bid in the 1979 Belmont Stakes. We've got Chris Obasinski to talk about the 2023 season at Delaware Park. We got Liza Hendricks talking about the next Wanamaker sale coming up June 8th. Before we do that, I wanted to play a couple minutes. Nick Hahn on our sister show, Off to the Races Virginia, interviewed Joshua Langsome last week. He is the grandson of the late, great Cab Calloway, the singer known as the King of Scat, among many other names. Minnie the Moocher, perhaps his signature song. And Cab Calloway was a big racetrack guy. He loved him some racing, and he grew up around Pimlico, grew up working at Pimlico and doing some hot walking, might have galloped a horse or two. So just a couple minutes here of Josh Langsome talking about his grandfather, Cab Calloway, and his love for the racetrack.
Yeah, I was very young when my grandfather was still around. And in the early 90s, in the late 80s, I would go to the racetrack with him. We lived in Delaware at that time, so Delaware Park would be his choice when he was down visiting us for the holidays. So I would go with him, and we would sit within the clubhouse, and people would come up to him for autographs and for pictures. And at the time, I didn't really know how significant Cab's history or cultural significance was. He was just my grandfather at that point. And he was a person of few words. We would drive out to the racetrack, and we would sit there for most of the races, and we'd leave before the last one, and wouldn't be talking that much, but he was a fan of the horses. And later in my life, I learned more about that, and it did start in Baltimore, where he was earning extra money for his family as a child by going to Pimlico and walking the hots after the races. And he developed a lifelong love for horses and the racetrack from, I think, that original experience. Yeah, so later in life, Cab recorded an interview where he said he actually galloped racehorses. And that was news to us, because we just thought he had walked the hots and sold the papers and kind of did sort of the odd jobs around the racetrack just to make some money. But it turns out that he was more involved than we thought. He's definitely said that he took out some racehorses for a spin on the track, and I guess that kind of sealed the deal for him with the adrenaline rush and, you know, getting first. And it has a lot to do with lineage and sort of, you know, breeding and training. And so a lot of these concepts that actually apply to his life.
Interesting stuff there. Joshua Langsome, grandson of the great Cab Calloway. Okay, let us turn our attention to the rest of today's show. I want to bring in Chris Obasinski, Racing Information Coordinator at Delaware Park. We visited the other morning to talk about what's happening at Delaware Park in the 2023 season. Chris, good morning and welcome to Off to the Races Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning. How are we looking there? Are you looking forward to this afternoon's Obeah Stakes?
Frank, thank you for having me on. And yes, for sure, I'm really looking forward to the Obeah Stakes. I'm really excited about Morning Matcher. I mean, I'm excited about all the starters. But I spoke to Butch Reed, he's really pumped up on his filly. And I am too, for no other reason than she's a really good, hard-knocking filly. I think she's got 18 starts, hit the board 15 times. She ran the Del Oroks last year and ran third and probably didn't have the best of trips. But what's really got me excited is when Butch told me that the brakes done her a world of good, that she's matured physically and mentally. And I thought the world of her last year, and I can only wait to see Morning Matcha now as a four-year-old going into the OBA at Delaware Park today. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's going to bring.
Well, and last year you had Miss Leslie win the OBA and then turn around and win the Delaware Handicap by a pole. So certainly that's a double that's been pulled off before, and I assume that Butch is looking at it if this filly continues to develop.
Yeah, that's part of his game plan. Basically, that's what he said, that the Delaware Handicap was one of their early targets for the beginning of our 2-4-year-old season. And, you know, a lot of horses, nice horses, have used the AB as a stepping stone for the Del Cap. Miss Leslie's won. Havity Grace is one that comes to mind. She won the AB and ran second to Blind Luck. And Unbridled Bell, past Delaware Handicap winner, did the same thing. So this is kind of a cool race. I really like this race because it kind of gives you a preview of what to expect. And you're at least going to probably see a couple of these horses come out of this race and run in the Del Cap. So it's a neat little race for me. And, you know, just off the top of my head, I just realized this. You're Out, I believe, won the Abia back in 2002, trained by Grand Motion. You're Out was just like a small stakes winner here in the Mid-Atlantic. And she came back and ran the Del Cap, and I think the Del Cap was $750,000 at the time, and ran against a horse named Summer Colony, who was one of the top fillies and mares in the country. And I'm never going to forget, You're Out had the lead with probably 10 jumps from the finish, and Summer Colony got it right on the line. And I'm never going to forget that race. That was a phenomenal race. You're Out gave it her all. It was a really, really cool race. The other thing I'm never going to forget, too, is I kept edging Gray Emotion on as she was progressing towards the Delaware Handicap. And he kept looking at me like, I think you're crazy, Chris. I think you're crazy, Chris. And after she won the OBA, he looked at me and goes, I guess I got no choice now.
It's always fun when when you have these big races and, stars come in from elsewhere and the local guy with the local horse makes a big run at him. That's always a lot of fun. I think back at Pimlico a number of years ago to when a horse named Silmaril, who ran primarily in Maryland but also a lot in Delaware and earned over $1 million the hard way, beat Ashado, who was the defending filly and mare champion in a little grade three at Pimlico, and what a cool moment that was. So totally get what you're saying. Now, Chris, the meet kicked off this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule for the moment at Delaware Park, then switching to Wednesday through Saturday. And, I hope you've been following my guy Joe Parisi, who's handicapping on theracingbiz.com. He, 5 of his top picks won on Wednesday, 5 more on Thursday. So he's 10 for 16 to start the meet.
I've been following that, actually. And kudos to him, hats off to him, because there have been some really difficult races to handicap here these first two cards. We've had some really competitive, fun fields that are a real challenge for the handicapper. So hats off to Joe for having two great opening days, or two great days in a row. That's quite an accomplishment. I mean, I think on Thursday, the first pick 5 paid $43,000, I think. I think there was one ticket. So that just goes to show you it's been a tricky card. So hats off to Joe.
Yeah. No, he's definitely on a heater to start the meet. Well, I assume everybody in this game comes back to earth sooner or later, but we'll try to keep it going as long as we can. So Joe Parisi.
You never know.
Yeah, you never do. That's why they run the race.
You can't be hitting it. You won't be able to hit that percentage if you start out at a lower percentage. So Keep it up. Keep going, man.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, all right, Chris, now the Delaware Park meet started just Wednesday, May 24th, extends through the end of October. And it looks like, you know, there's been some uncertainty in Maryland with the, you know, are they going to have a contract? Is racing going to go on beyond June 30? You know, sort of what's going to happen here in Maryland? That seems to be benefiting Delaware. It sounds like the backstretch at Delaware Park pretty full these days.
Well, the last time I checked with the racing office, they were saying that we should be up to be around 1,000. The mornings here at Delaware Park during training hours have been really busy. And I think for the first couple of cards we've drawn, I think that you can see that with some of the large competitive fields that we've been offering. So yeah, there's been a lot of activity here at Delaware Park. I think hopefully it will translate to on the track in the races in the afternoon, which I think after the first 2 days it has. And the cards we got coming up that we have already drawn, I suspect they will be the same as well.
Yeah, you had I was noticing one of the races, I think it was Thursday, was just an open allowance, no conditions. You know, basically any horse could enter, and I think you had about 11 or 12 horses for that. Which those sort of advanced allowance races are always a challenge for the racing office to fill. So they had to be pretty happy to get that kind of field for that quality of race.
Yes, they were happy. I was not, because I had to do the morning line odds. And that was a really, really tough race to do the morning line odds on. But like I tell people all the time, when a morning line odds guy's upset, that usually means everyone else is pretty excited. So that was a great, great race. I think Mac Robinson won that race with Sir Wellington in a really nice effort. It was a wide open race. I did.
Yeah,
I think
it paid
I
like 25 to win.
I think the race scratched down to 9 horses, but it was still a really competitive, fun race, and the betting public really responded too, because I really think they bet quite a few dollars on that race.
Yeah, no.
I think it was the second largest pool of the day compared to, I think we had one turf race that was larger.
Okay, yeah. Big fields and competitive races are what the betting public's looking for, so certainly.
And on the dirt going short, too. That's the other thing. It wasn't on the grass going long.
We're talking with Chris Sobosinski here. He is the Racing Information Coordinator at Delaware Park. Delaware Park kicked off its 2023 meet on May 24th, just this past Wednesday, going to extend through the end of October. So plenty of racing at Delaware Park. Get out there if you get a chance. They are friends of this program. Now, Chris, we obviously had some sad news in the off-season. J.J. Gracie, who had been the paddock host for the last couple of years, passed away, unfortunately, after a long career as a trainer, a radio guy, and on your signal and on other signals. So he had been around the game for a long, long time. But a familiar face replacing him this year, for those of us who pay attention to Mid-Atlantic racing, with Stan Salter. So that's something we'll be keeping an eye on. He seems like he's excited to be back, to coin a phrase, in the saddle.
Yes. Well, with J.J., we at Delaware Park, unfortunately, we only got to have him here 2 years. In the time that he was here, it was very special to me, and I think a lot of fans enjoyed him too. For me as a handicapper, I've always enjoyed talking to JJ, and I got an opportunity to get to know him a little bit better his last 2 years of his life while he worked here. And that's a time I'm never going to forget, and I want to cherish for as long as I'm alive, and I'm going to really miss JJ. But at the same time, really looking forward to Stan. Stan's come on board the first 2 days and has really jumped in and fit well. He's got a vast knowledge of horses in the Mid-Atlantic, a great background in terms of knowing the horses and from a horseman's perspective. And the first 2 days that he's been on, he's really brought a different approach and an exciting approach to it all. And I'm really looking forward to, as the meet goes on, to continue to listen to his analysis and his perspective on on the races we have here at Delaware Park. And I think he's a great addition, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know him as well as I got to know JJ.
Yeah, it should be fun to see as the year goes on. And Stan Salter, he's a guy who's been known to push some money through the windows. So certainly he's going to speak about this stuff from the perspective of a bettor. And he's also a guy who trained a horse or two, galloped a bunch of horses. So he's got a wide array of experience in the horse racing business. Now, one event I did want to bring up here while I've got you, Chris, you're having an author signing June 9th with Jennifer Kelly. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to have her here to have a book signing for no other reason than I think it's really important for us here in the Mid-Atlantic and especially in Maryland to really remember our heritage and our roots when it comes to all the great things that this area has given the sport of racing across the entire country. And her book, Foxes of Belair, focuses on the Belair Farm in Bowie. And there are so many other great stories, too. And I just think I'm looking forward to it because I think it gives us an opportunity here the day on June 9th when she has her book signing for us to reflect upon some of those contributions that we've made through the decades from this area, from this region, on the greater racing world. And I'm really looking forward to having the day and getting to reminisce about some of the old stories from we all have here from our experiences from racing in the Mid-Atlantic. So I think it's going to be a cool day with a lot of neat little stories bouncing back and forth, in addition to an opportunity to get to know the author a little bit.
Yeah, Jennifer, you can read an excerpt of her latest book, The Foxes of Bel Air, Gallant Fox Omaha, and the Quest for the Triple Crown, on theracingbiz.com. Jennifer, also a monthly, a regular contributor to The Racing Biz. And it should be an interesting event. That's the day before the Belmont Stakes. Belmont Stakes, June 10th at Belmont Park, the final leg of the Triple Crown. And Jennifer Kelly will be up at Delaware Park on June 9th. And Chris, last thing I wanted to just talk with you about briefly. So a little bit of an interesting change to the stakes schedule this year at Delaware. You got as per tradition, the Delaware Oaks, the first Saturday of July, the Delaware Handicap, the Grade 2 $500,000 Delaware Handicap, the following Saturday, the second Saturday. Then the third Saturday, you got a couple of turf stakes for three-year-olds, the Kent for three-year-old boys and the Christiana for sophomore fillies, both turf routes. So you're going to have a kind of a series of three kind of big weekends in a row, which is a little bit of a change from years past.
Yes. We decided to tweak the stakes schedule a little bit, just exactly as you described. Here at Delaware, one of the things that I really appreciate is we don't mind trying to do a tweak here or a tweak there to see if things will work. And sometimes through the year, some of those tweaks have been very successful. Some other times we've learned from them and we made adjustments and we improved on them. So I'm pretty excited about those three Saturdays in a row with those three stakes races. I'm really excited about July 15th too, because it's focusing on the three-year-old boys and girls on the turf, but it's also focusing on going long, which is, there's not really a whole lot of races like that out there in the greater racing landscape. So I'm interested to see what comes together for those races. I know last year the Cape Henlopen wasn't run on the turf. It was taken off the turf and run on the dirt. But one of the neat things about having that distance race, the Cape Henlopen, which is, I think, pretty sure it's a mile and a half on the turf last year, was Nest won that race, who went on to win the Breeders' Cup or Marathon later that year. So you never know what you're going to get. You never know when you have these kind of races, you know, what horses are going to be in the race and where they're going to go, and whether how things are going to play out over the course of the year. So that's what I'm really looking forward to with those distance races for three-year-olds.
Yeah, it is a fun division, and Nick Hahn on our site, theracingbiz.com, keeps a Turf 10, which is the top turf three-year-olds that are sort of two-turn horses. So right now he's got Web Slinger, who won the American Turf at Churchill Downs, is number one. Number three is a horse that just ran at Pimlico. That's Nagarok for Grand Motion, who set a course record.
Yeah.
Going a mile in 133.11. Now, the turf course was super fast this past weekend at Pimlico, but 133.11 is moving out, and he looked pretty impressive. So you do wonder, like, you know, you got to think Grand Motion's going to have a horse for those races.
Well,
wouldn't you say?
That's another, when I say the tweaks that we've experimented with here at Delaware Park through the years, the three-year-old distance races on July 15th is actually an extension of the Robert G. Dick that we started here probably 25 years ago, which is a mile and three-eighths for fillies and mares on the grass. And then a little bit later on, we had the Cape Henlopen. We added the Cape Henlopen, which one of the winners of the Cape Henlopen one year went on to win one of the last Arlington Millions running at Arlington Park. And Grand Motion has always had horses in a lot of those races, and I say the Robert G. Dick because I think we've had 25 runnings for the Robert G. Dick, and Grand Motion's had probably half the winners in those 25 runs. I mean, it hasn't been that many, but it seems like it.
It's not too far off, really. He does win that race about every other year.
That typically is – those kind of races are typically right in Grand Motion's wheelhouse, the types of horses he has. And I'm sure they probably got quite a few horses they have in mind for some of those races.
All right. Chris Obasinski, thanks for joining us here on Off to the Races. We're going to cut you loose now. Have a great day. Enjoy the Obeah Stakes this afternoon, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road.
Sounds great, Frank. Thank you.
That was Chris Obasinski, Racing Information Coordinator at Delaware Park. Delaware Park meet kicked off Wednesday, May 24th, extends through the end of October. You can learn more at their website, www.delawareparkcom. The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, will have full card picks and analysis every day of live racing from Delaware Park, plus lots of coverage you won't find anyplace else. The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding, covering Delaware in much more depth and detail than anybody else is doing. All right, that was Chris Obasinski. I want to talk now briefly with Liza Hendricks. Liza is the CEO of Wanamakers, wanamakers.com. Wanamakers online auction house has a couple of interesting things going on in coming up in June. They've got a New York bred sale takes place June 8th, and then that's followed by their regular monthly sale. Easy and efficient way to buy and sell horses online with Wanamakers.com. Let's bring in Liza Hendrick.
Liza, good morning. Welcome to the program here on Off to the Races Radio. Give us a quick refresher. What is Wanamakers.com exactly?
Thank you so much, Frank. Wanamakers is an online auction house. We have monthly online sales. Typically, our sales are mixed sales, so horses of racing age, weanlings, yearlings, broodmares, anything in between. Entries are usually open for about 3 weeks, and then we have our catalog out for 8 days so people can go and inspect the horses if they'd like, and then bidding's on the final day of the sale.
Now, I understand you guys have a New York bred sale coming up, so I guess that means that all the horses in that sale are going to be New York breds.
We do, yes. So we have a New York bred sale coming up, and they're all actually New York bred horses of racing age. So very timely coming up for the Saratoga meet and the sales just before Belmont Stakes weekend. So as people are looking to get their horses up to New York and those exciting New York bred races over the summer where people can take advantage of the great program that they have there.
Yeah, tons of money in the New York bred program. So give us the particulars on the New York bred sale. When do entries close? When can people see the catalog? When can they start bidding on horses?
Entries close next Tuesday, the 30th, May 30th, and the catalog will be out the next day, so the 31st, and then the sale closes. The horses will sell on June 8th. So that's the Thursday right before Belmont Stakes. So hopefully people will be up there, up at Belmont, and can go look at the horses that are stabled there while they're up there for Belmont Stakes weekend.
So it's perfect timing to get your Saratoga horse, which is the thing that everybody wants to have.
Exactly. Yep. You can have your horse walking around the paddock at Saratoga in the next few weeks.
Which is pretty exciting stuff. Mid-July, the Saratoga meet kicks off. Now, you guys have done, Wanamaker's has previously done a New York bred sale, and I understand that Nadja Thompson and the folks at the Breeders Association up there were pretty happy with how that went.
Correct. Yes. Last summer we had one actually just the week before the Saratoga meet started. And we had a horse that was in our sale. And then the next day he was entered. The horse was shipped, papers were transferred, and he ran the following week. And then he actually ended up winning at the end of the meet. So it was great to see that result. But we did have some feedback that people wanted to get their horses into their trainers about a month before the meet started. So that's why we've moved it up a little bit to Belmont Stakes weekend, just so trainers can get settled in with their horses and be ready to fire right at the beginning of the meet.
Okay, so May 31st catalog will be available. May 30th entries closed if you're looking to sell a horse, and then June 8th bidding on New York breds. That's the first of two June sales you are going to have at Wanamakers.com, correct?
Correct, yes, a busy month. So we have our mixed sale coming up, the June sale right after that. So entries close the Tuesday following that, the 13th, and then the catalog will be out the 14th, and horses will sell June 22nd, which is Ascot week.
So if anybody has a horse for Royal Ascot, they might miss this year. But now, do people – so if I – the New York bred sale obviously is a slightly different beast, but for your regular sale, like your June sale, if I see a horse in the catalog and it happens to be near me and I want to go actually physically see the horse, can I do that?
Yeah, of course. Yep, yeah, you can look at it if you're near it, or you can send someone to go look at it if you're not near it.
So you just, is that something you just work out with the person selling the horse?
Correct. Yep. So all the seller's information's on each page, and so you can reach out and schedule inspections or vetting.
Okay, interesting. So you can kind of have that whole horse buying experience, but without the hassle of having to be in a specific place for several days, blah, 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 blah. You can kind of just buy and sell the horse on your own time.
Yeah, you can pick and choose. And then if the horse is in training, they don't miss any days of training or can keep running and don't get exposed to all the germs that come with the sales grounds as well.
All right, so Wanamakers.com is the website. New York bred sale coming up May 31st. The catalog will be available. June 8th is when bidding occurs for the New York bred sale, and then the regular monthly sale of Wanamakers.com coming up right after that. So check out Wanamakers.com. Liza Hendricks, the CEO of Wanamakers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
That was Liza Hendricks, CEO of Wanamakers, Wanamakers.com online auction house. New York bred sale coming up. That sale takes place June 8th, 2 days before the Belmont Stakes, and then their regular monthly sale coming up shortly after that. So check it out, Wanamakers.com. Okay, want to turn our attention now. We are starting to think about the Belmont Stakes final jewel in the Triple Crown. No Triple Crown on the line this year, because we've already had two different winners. We had Mage take the Kentucky Derby in the Preakness Stakes. It was National Treasure. Mage going to sit out the Belmont. National Treasure is expected to post in the Belmont Stakes. So that's coming up June 10th, Belmont Stakes at Belmont Park. Now, One of the most famous non-wins in the Belmont Stakes, one of the most famous sort of upsets, was the defeat of Spectacular Bid in the 1979 Belmont Stakes. Spectacular Bid had won the Kentucky Derby, had won the Preakness, was considered basically a mortal lock to win the Belmont Stakes, which he did not do. Now, history has told us over the years that maybe that had something to do with a pin that the horse stepped on prior to the running of the Belmont, or maybe what it was a kind of a panicky ride from his jockey, apprentice rider, Ronnie Franklin. Ronnie Franklin, a local kid, a Maryland kid from Dundalk, who had gotten the ride on Spectacular Bid and had won the Derby, had won the Preakness, was riding pretty high at the moment, and then, well, not so much after the Belmont Stakes. But our next guest, he's going to want us to reconsider kind of Ronnie Franklin's career and legacy and kind of reconsider what happened in the Belmont Stakes. His name is Jack Gilden, and he has written a book called The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid and the Undoing of a Sure Thing. Let's hear my interview with Jack Gilden, which took place at Pimlico. Well, Jack, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on Off to the Races. Let me start you with this. I think most of us think we know in broad strokes what the Spectacular Bid story is. What made you decide you wanted to revisit it?
Well, that's a great question, because the Spectacular Bid story had been cemented for almost 50 years, almost half a century. And so it happened in 1979, and everybody pretty much felt like they understood the broad strokes of what it was. And that was, is that you had this miraculous horse, and he really was. He was every bit as good or better than Secretariat. And that's something that you can demonstrate. And that he was ruined by this jockey who was not ready for the opportunity, who wasn't skilled enough to handle the horse, and was just not savvy enough to handle the fame that came his way, and he got addicted to drugs, and he ruined the horse's chances of the Triple Crown and the Belmont Stakes with a very poor ride. That was the story that everybody knew. So what interested me was, as I started to look into it, I quickly found that the truth was almost the opposite of everything that everyone believed.
That jockey is Ronnie Franklin. He was a 19-year-old apprentice at the time. And just to kind of fill in on what you just said, so the story we've heard is Bid wins the Derby, wins the Preakness, is basically a mortal lock headed into the Belmont, and some combination of these two things happens. He steps on a pin the morning of the race, and then Franklin gives him a panicky ride where he kind of let him loose too early, and he goes up with a hopeless long shot, and he's out of horse when the
runner chased it 100-1 shot, and he very early in the race, and then ran out of gas, just as you said, in the home stretch.
So what's the truth?
Well, the truth is the opposite of all of that. So Franklin was 15 years old when he first walked through the gates of Pimlico, and didn't know anything about horses, had never even seen a horse live in his life until that day when he walked through the gates. He was a high school dropout. He was working at Roy Rogers, selling hamburgers and French fries. His parents were worried about him. You know, what was going to become of his life? He was this tiny guy, bullied in high school, or at least people attempted to bully him. And so Ronnie Franklin's father saw that this was a tough little guy. He was really strong, really tough, indomitable. And he saw him out his window chasing bullies away from his regular sized brother. And, you know, he sees this little guy chasing bullies down the street. And he said, you know what? I know the solution for this guy. Let's take him to Pimlico. That's a jockey, he said. And he convinced his father. So they took him to Pimlico as an aspiring hot walker. And that day, the Delp family came down to get him and took him back to their operation to walk horses. And then from there, he struck up a good friendship with Buddy Delp's son, Gerald. And then he came to Buddy's attention. And he was built for being a jockey, as Wilt Chamberlain was built for being a basketball player. You could just see. He was a perfect size, exactly the perfect size, super strong and fearless. So they decided they were going to make a jockey out of him. And from, I don't know, 2 years or so later, after walking through the gates and never having met a horse, he won the Kentucky Derby. He was the apprentice jockey of the year in the country. He won the Eclipse Award. He was winning on all kinds of horses. And then he went out there, and what began to happen was he unraveled, you know, internally. He started to exhibit the signs of, you know, a breakdown almost. He kicked a horse. He was getting into fistfights with the other jockeys, but it wasn't him. It was Buddy Delp, his trainer, was engineering these problems. He sent him in to fight Angel Cordero after the Florida Derby, you know, and they ended up flinging racial insults at all the Hispanic jockeys, and they ended up with a target on their back. And
I want to back.
Yes,
I want to
sure.
jump in there for a minute. So you just said Buddy Delp engineered these problems.
Yes.
Specifically, you address that. What,
okay.
What do you mean by that?
Well, okay. I mean, there were a lot of problems there that were leading this guy to break down, this very strong kid, and he had been a very strong rider. So when I say Buddy Delp engineered these problems, Ronnie came to not only work for Buddy, but he came to live with him in his house in Laurel. Ronnie and Gerald, Buddy's son, they lived together up in Gerald's room. They were best friends. Buddy allowed him to be there. But it wasn't long before he was taking advantage of the kid, because he's unsophisticated. He's young. Now he had, you know, very little parental supervision, and all of a sudden he's losing his money in big pots of poker. He's paying, you know, Buddy introduces him to cocaine, and before long he's paying for the house's cocaine and drugs and alcohol and parties and things like that. Like, little tricks were played on him, like, hey, I'm gonna go put a bet down for you, give me $2,000, I got something good. Gives him the $2,000, and then the guy that brought him to the track, who said, you know, he looked like a jockey, he was taking care of him, and he was following Buddy Delp all around the track while, after he put the $2,000 in his pocket. It never came out of his pocket. And then he followed him all the way back eventually to Franklin and says to him, your horse lost. So all of these things that were happening to him, he's winning, you know, he's supposedly making percentages and good money, but he had no money. He's begging his father for money so he can buy a hamburger, you know, things like that. The drugs were all introduced to him by Mr. Delp, you know. All of these types of things were happening, and even in these moments when his talent was taking him high, he was being brought low under, you know, behind the scenes. In the end, at the Belmont Stakes, this idea that he had messed it up and he chased a long shot, that was also Buddy Delp. His instructions to him before the race were, take him away, he said. You know, and so I found in my research, he sat with Jacinto Vasquez in the morning and said to him, we're going to beat Secretariat's record here today. And Jacinto said to him, you're nuts, you're crazy. He said, this track is 2 seconds slower than the track was that day. You're going to try and chase Secretariat and you're going to end up getting caught in the stretch. That's exactly what happened. He also talked to Ron Turcotte the same day. You know, later on in the day, he's back by the stalls with Turcotte, and he told him the same thing, we're going to beat your record today. So he had Ronnie chasing the long shot. It wasn't Ronnie's idea to do it. He ran the race that the trainer told him to. That was exactly what Jacinto said to me. I said, did he run a terrible race in the Preakness? He said, he just ran the race that his trainer told him to run.
Talking with Jack Gilden here, author of Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid, and the Undoing of
the Undoing, yeah.
Now the rest of the story, so Spectacular Bid comes back as a 4-year-old, Delp takes Franklin off, he puts Shoemaker on. Spectacular Bid goes on as a 4-year-old and has what could be argued is the best season any horse has ever had. He sets track records everywhere he goes. He goes undefeated. He's so good that his last race is a walkover.
He's carrying huge amounts of weight.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy good season. Bid goes in the Hall of Fame. Buddy Delp goes in the Hall of Fame. What happens to Ronnie Franklin?
Ronnie's not even in the Maryland Hall of Fame, which, when you really think about what he accomplished in such a short period of time, he's one of the most miraculous athletes to ever come out of Baltimore. I mean, you'd put him right up there with Babe Ruth or Cal Ripken or somebody of that stature. But, you know, instead he goes off into oblivion. He rides a few more years. He goes in and out of jail. He and Gerald were caught having drugs delivered to them in I believe, Kentucky. He gets married and divorced. He later on gets remarried and divorced. And, you know, basically he goes into addiction, and it was something that he never could completely beat for the rest of his life. And, you know, I talked to a neuroscientist who just focused on addiction. She had been an addict herself. She wrote a memoir about it all. And she said, if you were brought to drugs at the age that this kid was brought to it, if you were brought by a father figure like he was, she said, you'd have almost no chance of breaking that addiction. She said it was almost a deadlock certainty that he would be an addict, because when you start taking it in your teen years and your early teen years, she said your whole brain is rewired for addiction because you're still so far from having, you know, a fully grown brain. So he went off to many, many negative consequences, worked blue collar jobs, crazy jobs like selling gas cards from door to door, you know, or phone cards or something. Mm-hmm. So it was not a good years for him. You know, his best years were all before he was 20 years old.
Yeah, and he died at 58, I think, just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So obviously a tough kind of long road after.
Yeah, and it's sad and avoidable. You know, and I still, you know, I look at the story and I see what happened to him, and I think if it had been reported correctly when it happened, I believe that he, you know, it would have saved other people. Like, so who died next? Len Bias, John Belushi. You know, it's a lot of people under the spell of more powerful people, and they get involved in these things, and it ruins them or kills them.
How much did, obviously he lost the mount on bid after after the Belmont. How does that, was that a thing he carried with him? I mean, how impactful was
that
for
him?
Yeah,
I mean, I think that he carried the Belmont loss, even though he knew it wasn't his fault, but he carried it with him anyway. And publicly, he always put the blame on himself. He was one of the reasons why the story was covered up, because he admired Buddy Delp so much, still referred to him as Mr. Delp to the very end of his life, and never blamed him publicly for anything. And so, yeah, he carried the loss of the Belmont Stakes. He carried the loss of the of his career, all of those things with him for the rest of his life. And he constantly relived it in his head and couldn't get over any of it. But it wasn't the reason why he was an addict. He felt these regrets and these terrible feelings of loss because he was an addict. He didn't become an addict because of the regret. He already was one.
Now, let me ask you this. We ran on theracingbiz.com, we ran a kind of a photo essay a few days before the Preakness that was pictures from the 70s and 80s, the Preakness then, that were taken by Lauren Amberman, who's a former racetracker.
And a friend of mine.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Some terrific photos.
Yes.
One of which,
she's great,
was Ronnie on bid after the Preakness. He's got a big smile on his face. And what to me makes the picture almost sort of magical is he's like reaching down and clasping hands with somebody that you barely see in the corner of the photo, and it's Buddy Delp. And it's just a really cool image. And I guess talk for a minute about, like, what was it like for this kid who, as you said, he was from Dundalk, he's a blue-collar kid, kind of a kid with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, is my sense, who didn't know anything about horses and then shows up and a couple years later is winning the biggest race in his home state, like virtually right around the corner from where he grew up. What was that moment like for him?
Well, it was big, but he couldn't enjoy it, because part of the addiction is that you couldn't, you know, it robbed you of joy. You couldn't feel joy, according to the neurologist. But in addition to that, he had all these things going on. He already was losing all of his money and knew it. He already was, you know, in this feud with Angel Cordero and some of the other Hispanic riders, and it was wearing on him. He on the day of the Preakness, he was served with papers for a paternity suit for a young woman that he had like a one-time, you know, like 1 hour tryst with. And they come in and slam papers in his chest just before the Preakness Stakes.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And then, you know, you can see him starting to unravel. So he kicks a horse, which was very unusual for him because he was an animal lover and a horse lover, but he kicks this horse that he loses on, and he does it right in front of the chief steward. Mm-hmm. He didn't realize it. He's riding erratically. the press is picking on him. Andrew Beyer of the Washington Post writing horrible pieces about him and kind of, you know, making him look incompetent without really bringing out both sides of the evidence. You know, he kind of withheld the evidence that didn't support his case and pushed the evidence that he was incompetent. And, you know, embarrassing. There was like no realization that you're talking about a 19-year-old kid, a child.
Right.
He wasn't like a 35-year-old hardened veteran. He's just a boy, essentially. And, you know, so all of these things are ganging up on him. So the pleasures that he should have received coming home and winning this big, big, important race, it just wasn't there for him. The Sun papers running uncomplimentary pieces about him and talking about, you know, like I found things that, talking about what a bratty kid he was and, you know, having some of his old teachers putting him down in his hometown paper on this big weekend. It's like, I guess they can write whatever they want. They're supposed to write whatever they want. But it just seemed kind of unkind for somebody so young and who's achieving such gigantic things.
Now, one of the other things, and we're going to wrap up shortly, but one of the other things that struck me reading, I haven't finished the book, but I've read some of it, and this is obviously all benefit of hindsight, but this sort of sense that, like, a whole lot of things were about to change. You know, I mean, he grew up in a blue-collar neighborhood, Dundalk, and all those jobs were about to leave Baltimore, or probably had already started to leave Baltimore, and then soon enough would leave Baltimore. He was in horse racing, which was, you know, commanding the heights of the sporting world in 1979, and now is largely irrelevant to most people. He got involved with drugs, which was just about to be a huge scourge throughout the country. So was that a thing that sort of attracted you at all to the story, the sense of, like, kind of on the precipice of change?
Well, I think more than change, what I was looking at was the past more than the future. So for me, I saw the kid as almost like a blank tablet, and anything could have been written on the pages. But what I, you know, as I started to research it, and immediately upon beginning to do my research, what I found was that he was like a, you know, like that baby sweepy that Popeye owns, and he's always like climbing on steel girders high off the ground. He's always like gonna die, and Popeye saves him at the last second. Well, that was Ronnie Franklin in a way. He was a baby coming into these highly dangerous situations, and he was totally unprepared for it. What I had found was that there was cheating, doping, you know, all kinds of horrible problems around racing for decades and decades and decades before Ronnie Franklin came through the front door. So what I really saw in Ronnie Franklin was a piece of unmolded clay, and he could have been anything. He was raised in a good family with a good mother, a father who adored him and loved him, and he came through the gates, and he was out of their control. He didn't know how to handle it all, and he was in a highly corrupt atmosphere.
All right. The book is Fast Ride, Spectacular Bin, The Undoing of a Sure Thing. Where can people pick it up?
You can get it on Amazon. If you want a autographed version, you can feel free to call me personally or reach out to me through Facebook or, you know, whatever. And I direct a lot of people to the Ivy Bookshop. Especially if you want an autographed one, you can get in touch with me and then buy it there, and they'll send it out to you. So, but it's, you know, it's through the University of Nebraska Press.
Okay. His name is Jack Gilden. His book is Fast Ride, Spectacular Bin, The Undoing of a Sure Thing. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Another episode of Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, is in the books. That's going to do it here for us on Off to the Races. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday with us. We do appreciate it. Want to say thanks to our show supporters, which include Richard Ackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers.com online auction house. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show. We featured this week Jack Gilden, author of The Fast Ride, Spectacular Bid, and The Undoing of a Sure Thing. Chris Sobosinski from Delaware Park. Liza Hendricks, the CEO of Wanamakers.com. Keep keep up with racing and reading all week long on the Racing Biz, the racingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive. Hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. This has been Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.